The book of Proverbs in the Old Testament is a portion of that scripture which is commonly referred to as the wisdom literature. From beginning to end in that book, two groups of individuals are contrasted. We have on the one hand those who are wise, and we have on the other those who are scoffers. In chapter 9 of that book, wisdom is personified as a woman who is continually crying out in the streets to the young to turn into her house, to sit at her feet, and to learn wisdom and understanding. The picture that Solomon paints is of a woman in a very public place crying out loudly. You'd have to be dumb, deaf, and blind to miss her. And yet he says many will not give any heed. And wisdom says to those who ignore her and go their way, that they will become entrapped in their foolishness, and then when they are searching for her, wisdom, she will be nowhere to be found. She will not be listening to their cries because it will be too late. As you go through the pages of the book of Proverbs in the American Standard, the word scoffer is a person who mocks religion and virtue. Someone who, when they consider those subjects, makes fun of them. Says that essentially you are foolish to be religious, and they do not want to have anything to do with virtue. Another word that is used sometimes in the book is someone who is simple. A simple-minded individual. That word, as it is found in the Hebrew, simply means someone who is still undecided. They are embarking on their journey through life, and they are undecided as to which way to go. Solomon says, wisdom is crying out to those individuals, giving them the choice. You can conduct your life with wisdom, or you can go your way and live the life of foolishness. Now, I know it's somewhat arbitrary, but I have chosen what I refer to as two key verses in the book of Proverbs. On the one hand, you have Proverbs 13 and verse 20. The writer there says, walk with wise men, and thou shalt be wise, but the companion of fools shall smart for it. The other key verse is found in chapter 15, verse 12. In my Bible, it's convenient because they're open up to the same opening, one on one side of the page and one on the other. But in chapter 15, in verse 12, Solomon says, a scoffer does not love to be reproved, and he will not go unto the wise. I'm using these particular passages as a background to what we're going to be discussing this morning as it relates to the home and marriage. And I want to talk rather bluntly this morning about our description of marriage today. I think you would agree with me, if you thought about it for a while, that more and more people are headed down the scoffer's road, the foolish road. And they are not interested in correction. They are not interested in instruction. They want to do and live and behave any way they want to, and they're going to be the ones smarting for it. You know, the book of Proverbs is a very interesting book. In another passage, Solomon said this. He said, righteousness exalts a nation, but that sin is a reproach to any people. A nation, it has been said, can rise no higher than the family unit. As goes the family, so goes the nation. And I am afraid that we are seeing that take place before our very eyes in this country. I do not believe yet that we have gone down the road of no return, but we're getting awfully close. It is said that the divorce rate is roughly 50% of those who get married. We also know that as far as couples are concerned now, it's well over 30% do not even bother to get married. And many folks, it seems, just go from one liaison to another, to another, to another, giving no concern or regard to any of the things that the Bible discusses. And so what I want to do this morning is, as I said, be rather blunt. And by the way, my style for classes most of the time is I like a little bit of discussion. And I want to do that particularly this morning because I know that there are many of you here who are farther down the road in marriage and raising children than I am. I've only been married about 24 years. My two boys are now in their early 20s. And so I know that many of you have more experience than I, and I could learn from you. And so as we discuss these things this morning, I want you to feel free to raise your hand and throw in your two cents worth, as they say. The word crisis is a word that is overused today. But I believe the family is in crisis. And I believe it is for the very reasons that Solomon talks about in the book of Proverbs. More and more are scoffing at religion and virtue and are refusing to even seek out wisdom and guidance as far as marriage in the home is concerned. And toward that end, that is giving out guidance, that's one of the reasons, of course, why the church here annually presents these series of lessons on the home. I remember, like I say, as a young boy in the 60s, even then, divorce was uncommon. It was growing more and more common, but it was still uncommon, and divorce once caused panic and shame among people. But now, it's become commonplace, accepted, and in many quarters, just more or less a part of life. This influence of broken homes has permeated its way into the community, into the schools. I don't know how familiar you are with the school system, but it wasn't too long ago I was involved with the schools down in San Mateo, elementary schools particularly. And it had become commonplace, and it was accepted for the school to become sort of a daycare center, and it was necessary for folks to be around from the time that school got out, about 2:20, down to about 5:30. And there was concern over meals, breakfast, lunch, and even dinners, so that these children would have something to eat, because the concern was that they were not being fed properly at home. And as I related the other night, I remember one young boy in the second or third grade coming up to me all excited about the fact that this weekend, he said, "I'm going to go and spend the weekend with my dad. Last weekend, my little brother got to spend the weekend with his dad, and next week, our other brother will be spending the weekend with their father. But this weekend, it's my time to be with my dad, and I can't wait." One mother, at least three children, three different fathers. And that's becoming more and more commonplace. The family is in decline. And the sobering truth is that if we as Christians Do not do all that is within our power to put the brakes on this by our influence, by our teaching. There will be very little hope for not only the destiny of the family in Western civilization, but at least even for this country. In Genesis 2 and verse 18 and verses following, you will remember that that is where we are introduced to this great blessing that God has given unto us, the home. Marriage is first referred to there, not in word, but in the very act. And as man so often does with things that God gives to us for our betterment, we have taken it and we have wrecked it in many places. So what I want to do this morning is just in a very blunt way, look at marriage today and what we see going on about us today and how that compares to what we see on the pages of our Bibles, and discuss, if we might, some things that we might be able to do to influence the family, the home, those who are entering into marriage to get back toward the place they need to go. Here is a question. If an individual or a couple will not look at the divine pattern, where else will they turn? Have you ever thought about that? Think for just a moment. Perhaps you know someone. They are refusing to look at the divine pattern. Have you ever had somebody come up to you and tell you, you're trying to sit down and study with them the scriptures, and they tell you, I don't care what the Bible says. I've had people say, I don't care what the Bible says. If people will refuse to look at that pattern, where else will they turn? If you've been observant at all of our society, where do you think people are turning? Any ideas? Okay, turning to Dr. Phil. Where else do you think people are turning for their pattern as to how they want to model their quote-unquote relationship? We're not even talking about marriage now in many quarters, are we? It's relationships. Who do people look to? Yes. Okay, celebrities.
Anyone that will agree with them.
Okay. Anyone that will agree with them. So now let's look at these aspects. We've named names, categories, but back up a little bit and let's examine them. If someone is turning to Dr. Phil, what does that mean? Not just him, of course, but what does that mean? Not turning to God. Getting away from divine wisdom, essentially, and looking at human wisdom. Now, we're not here to insult Dr. Phil or to criticize necessarily anything he's doing. But what I'm suggesting is that if you're going to turn your back on divine wisdom and turn toward human wisdom, you're going to be subject to error, imperfections, and you may get caught up in the foolishness that other folks are caught up in, not realizing that you're headed that way because they seem to be so smart. The second group that was mentioned were the celebrities. If you do not think that that is a group that people turn to, then I just want to let you know, all you need to do is go down to a Lucky's or a Safeway or wherever, and in that checkout line, look at all the magazines, the weekly papers, and look at the headlines and the photographs and everything that's going on. Let me remind you of something. In the 40s, the 50s, even the early 60s, maybe all of the 60s, I don't know. If a Hollywood starlet suddenly turned up pregnant, the studios and others would try to sweep it under the rug. They would seek to hide it. It was a career killer. And a lot of things took place in Hollywood that were not pretty, that at the time were not legal. things were done in such a way to hide the fact that it was just unheard of, and it was just not right. It was not accepted for a starlet to turn up with child. But in the last 15, 20 years, it's becoming common for a starlet, I don't even know if that's the proper word anymore, but to make her intentions known. It's time for me to have a baby. I'm not even going to worry about getting married. I'm going to look around now, and I've read some saying, I'm going to look around for the best father I can find, father material, and let them be the father of my child. And they can be as involved or uninvolved in the welfare and the raising of my child as they want to be. It's time for me to have a baby. I want to have one. And I'm not going to worry about getting married. That's becoming a common thing in Hollywood. You hear that all the time with celebrities. The problem with looking to those folks as role models is not only do they have a tremendous amount of influence and even wealth that makes it appear like they're doing the right thing or a good thing. The problem is that more and more younger folks who are still at a very impressionable age are looking more to them as role models than to their parents. And part of the problem there is that both parents aren't in the home. But even if they are, it doesn't take long to realize that even the parents are looking to these folks as their role models. Now, the other suggestion or the other point that was brought up was that if you don't turn to the divine pattern, not only in the home but in everything, you will look for people who agree with you. All of us, we develop a worldview. And it is influenced, believe it or not, at a very early age. And the worldview will either be one that accepts the existence of God and an attempt to do His will in all things, or it will be one that will reject God and you just go on and do however you want to do it. And that worldview is going to influence how one thinks and how one acts. And what we are good at as human beings is seeking out and aligning ourselves with those who have the same opinions, attitudes, as we do. That's really prevalent in the religious world, isn't it? What was it Paul told Timothy about folks who would have itching ears? They would seek out to themselves teachers. I don't care what it is you believe or think in the religious world. If you look long enough, you'll find somebody teaching it, and you'll just settle right down at home there. But folks, as we've been saying all along, the home and the institution of marriage is far too important to just settle for anything other than the divine pattern. Would you not agree that it wasn't too long ago, even folks who were irreligious, at least appreciated the sanctity of marriage and viewed marriage as something permanent and exclusive? And it was very common in the home for parents to teach their children, the young ladies, to grow up and be ladies and not just settle for anyone. And the young men to seek out and get good education, make sure they could provide for their family, and be the type of young man that a woman would seek to marry. And understand that it's important when you get together in marriage, and that marriage is sanctified. But we don't have that anymore. People in the home are no longer being taught that. So I believe one of the things we're going to have to do as Christians is teach that in our homes, and do everything we can to influence that teaching in other folks' homes by our example and by word. Let me throw something out for you that I heard the other day. I'm still thinking about it, but I'm beginning to think it's probably true. A prominent psychologist said that the moral tenor of a society is always regulated by the behavior of its women. that if the women would take it upon themselves once again to be chaste, to behave in a pure manner, to say no to the men and mean it, that society would elevate itself and get back on track. But that we find more and more women who are no longer looking at being chaste and remaining pure as a good thing, but rather just something that really doesn't matter. And that if you find someone that looks good, well, there's nothing wrong with hooking up with them. Now think about that for a moment. Yes?
When I was growing up in a young woman that we would call get in the family way out of wedlock, was always referred to as some young man got this girl in trouble. So my point in saying that is that the problem, we can always point the finger around and say the problem is women or whatever. If we look at it scripturally, we really don't have mature men.
Exactly.
And that's the root of the problem, is the man.
Yeah. Now, I've always thought that way and considered that, but when this psychologist made that point, I thought, you know what? Because I remember in high school, I mean, it was rare if word got out that there was a certain girl that would say yes. I mean, that was, most girls wouldn't. And you know, as they used to say, there's the type of girl that you marry and there's the type you date. But now, it's like you're getting all to be the same. Yeah.
It goes for other things, too, as far as, you know, civilization goes. Maybe women don't understand what great lengths men go to try to impress them. But if it turns out that they're impressed no matter what you do, what motivation do you have to do anything good?
Yeah.
Because if now it's like if a man is, you know, a bum or, you know, he's lazy, he's a bully, you know, he's, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever just crummy thing a guy can be, if he can still get a girl to say, to go home to at night and say, oh, hi, honey, I love you, no matter what lousy things he does during the day, you know, runs off using drugs during the day, when he comes home, and he's actually got a woman waiting for him. I mean, there's people, murderers in prison, getting married in prison.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, what motivation, you know, do? And I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, yeah, men are responsible for what they do, no matter what. But just, if women would, you know, get together and say, we're not going to put up with your nonsense. I mean, you have to be a good, honest, hardworking man. Otherwise, we're not going to give you the time of day. Men would shape up like that.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't have any choice. But now they do, because they can always find somebody. There's always somebody,
yeah,
willing to put up with them. So they don't bother to try to transcend their baser instincts.
Yep.
I grew up in the Church of Christ, and I was under the teaching from Brother Ira Rice. We went to this service 365 days, and I was a teen in high school in San Francisco. And I grew up with the Jewish life, and he was a very influential as a teen, and when we were going to church every night, I was intercepted by a gang, and the Lord delivered me to death. They were killing me. Gang, it was by, I don't know how many, I was only in my teen. And he said, where are you going? I'm going home. Where have you been? I've been to church. He said, let her go. I have seen the handiwork. By the way, I've been married 56 years.
Well, good.
I was married all my life. But if you follow God in direction, there's no better direction.
No, that's, life. Yes, that's.
And by the way, I come from a broken home. My mother was married for 35. And, but I always love the Word. I love studying,
yeah,
the Word. And I memorize. And you'll memorize all you can.
We do. We need to do that. It needs to be taught in the home. Yes.
Also, there's not a lot of lifestyle that sets up daily work as before.
No.
So you're decreasing the number of men that you can really look up to or choose, because they're just not available anymore.
No, there's fewer good role models. Yes.
Society too is we're discouraged from making any sort of distinction between
Yep.
These things that little boys are supposed to play with. And it, over time, it tends to develop a situation where there are fewer distinctions. Girls are encouraged to act more like boys, to be tomboys, or whatever you want to call it. But to the point that there's more familiarity that exists between the women, and you can see how that ultimately breaks down a lot of the morality and the standards where, you know, people say, look, there's certain things I'm not going to do. You know, it comes from that sort of throwing everyone together and, you know, we're all just the same. And so people don't recognize the distinctions that
you
establish.
Yes.
You know, you made a comment earlier about how in our lives that we should be role models or be influences to others. But when one themselves wants an influence but has also fallen into that same pattern of divorce and remarriage, it's very hard to propose a valid argument. It's very hard to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Yep.
When they themselves have fallen into that same situation, and whether they have been forgiven by the Lord Jesus Christ and the Father in heaven or not, it still holds very little weight, if you will, in society.
Yeah.
Because they still, regardless of how wrong they are living, they still see that individual as lesser than themselves. So what influence can one give in that condition?
Well, essentially what we're talking about, why we have this series, of course, is that we are trying to remind ourselves and encourage ourselves to live and behave and follow these things and to train our children to do that. And remember that as parents we have that responsibility. However, as you're saying, there is more and more of an influence of these things that have crept into the church, and folks are repenting and they are being forgiven. And they do now, they have, when, as you say, they speak with someone, someone looks at, well, haven't you been? Well, yes, I was. But still, if you can sit with them, Bible in hand, and show them, and get them to agree that we're not looking at my case, we're looking at the idea that that God has, and you still have not gone this direction, and which way do you want to go? And I have used this before. You lay out for them the choice. Well, you've seen the mistake in my life. Is that something to be avoided or to stay, or do you want to go that way? And usually, well, no, you're right. I don't want to go that way. And you say, well, I'm telling you, I wish I had done it this way, or I wish I had learned, or I wish somebody had been around to tell me. But I'm telling you now, show them and try to get them to agree. In other words, like the old sales trick, you try to get them to be the one saying yes, not you. But that is a problem we face, and Paul talks about that. We need to live in such a way that we do not give people the occasion to blaspheme or to speak bad about God. And so, again, that's why we have these, is to try to train us up and to remind us that we're not just talking about something we're talking about here in a classroom setting or here in the evening, but we need to be living and walking the walk every day out there, because people are listening to us, even though we're not saying a word, we're speaking volumes. Yes?
I think one of the things that we have trouble with is recognizing the difference in the tense verbs. There's a difference in I was and I am. And when we look at our lives, it's one thing to say, you know, I'm doing something that's wrong. It's another thing to say, I did something that was wrong. It was wrong.
Right.
And I think that's true whether you're talking about, you know, parents, because a lot of times kids will try to tell parents, well, you did it. And, you know, to me, that should have never been much of a deterrent. The proper response seems to be, and that's exactly why you're not going to do this.
Right.
You know, I know what it caused.
What is intriguing, though, is that in other areas of life, people listen. But as far as morality and righteousness is concerned, for whatever reason, a roadblock does go up. I'll give you an example of what I mean. You come across somebody who's changing their oil and they don't have the oil plug back in the pan and they're getting ready to fill it in. You tell them, boy, I did that once and I was, and the oil just came through. Oh, it got all over me. You need to make sure you plug it. They don't turn to you and say, well, you didn't plug it when you filled it, so who are you to tell me? They will usually say something, well, thanks for reminding me. Yeah, you're right, I need to do that. But you come and you tell them something about how God wants them to live, and you throw in, well, you know, because I made that mistake. They'll look at you and, well, then who are you to tell me? You see the difference? And it's intriguing that in all other areas of life, people will look at you and it lends credence that you've made the mistake. Oh, you know what you're talking about then. Yeah, you're right. But with righteousness, oh, well, who are you to tell me? And it's intriguing that it's that way. Now, what about this? By the way, back to this, that statement made about women setting the tenor of society. Like I said, I don't know how far or how long along I agree with that or not. It was something that I'd heard recently, and I've been thinking about it. And the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. Now, I don't mean to, I'm not here to place the blame all on the women or all on men or vice versa. We all have a role that we're playing. But if you think about it, it's the women who have the power to say no. And as you said, more and more, they're just, it's like standards are getting lower and lower. Now, here's the question. Where are those standards set and reinforced? In the home. It is mom's and dad's job, it is their responsibility to set and enforce standards beginning at a very early age. You young folks here, I'm telling you, when you go to get married, it's more than just batting the eyes and being in love. That wears off very quickly. And especially when the little children come along. And more people are throwing up their hands and running from that responsibility. Because, as was suggested, they haven't grown up themselves yet. I'm telling you, marriage is work. Particularly when you're raising the kids, you need to teach them. You need to be the right example. You need to enforce these standards and tell them and train them so that everything they're doing is done with a view toward when they're older and out on their own. Is there? Yeah, go ahead. Exactly.
And I mean from here to Texas to Oklahoma or wherever. Women, and when Christ was there, they were servants. They were the servants.
Now there's another way to look at that. People say, but now what's the backbone of the church? The men are the leadership, but it's the woman in the pew. Now, I don't know how to ask this question. Does anybody in here not know of an instance where there's a man 30, 35, maybe even 40 years old, not living at home with his parents still? Do you know of any? Is there anybody in here who does not know of a case of that? Because I know of several. Many cases where men in their 30s, even in their 40s, they're still living at home. Have not a dime to their name. Their life is just, if their parents are dead and gone, they're in trouble. In fact, they're living down in the basement waiting for mom and dad to kick off because in the house is going to be all theirs, or at least they think. More and more folks are, because of immaturity or whatever it is, they are no longer accepting their responsibility. and they are no longer preparing themselves so that at a very early age, 18, 19, and 20, they can be out on their own. We have to reinforce that, and we need to start teaching that. Now, how about this? Does it seem to you that more and more folks live and behave as though it is their right to just party and have a good time every day of their life? Doesn't it seem that more and more people, they live and behave that way as though, you know, it's my right and there's nothing better on this world and it's my whole purpose in living to just party and have a good time. I'm going to go do this, I'm going to go do that, it just feels good, I'm having fun. Yeah, I'm supposed to be at work, I'll just call in and tell them I can't make it. If they fire me, oh well, I'll get another job. For people that are at least concerned and considerate about their job, they work Monday through Friday just to get to the weekend so the beginning Friday night they can do what? Party till Sunday night. I know of cases of children in their late 20s, early 30s, single moms and dads have young infants, and they many times will go by the grandparents' house on a Friday afternoon and say, here, can you watch my kid for the weekend because I'm going to go out and party. And I don't know where I'll be tomorrow or what condition I'll be in, but I don't want to have to be worrying about little Johnny here, so you take him. I know of three cases where that happens frequently. What is going on with this nation? How do we combat that as God's people? How do we do it? Yes? It is difficult, but it is not impossible.
I realize that.
Yeah. But you're right, because that's part of what I'm talking about. People feel it's... Yeah, it is.
And do you know people that actually... A 30-year-old, someone's only 30, you can't have sex for the next 60 years, or 40 years, whatever. They said, forget it, it's difficult to do, because that emotion, that attachment, it's hard to give up. Be honest with you.
Yes, it is. And you go back to the beginning, God took that into consideration, and He provided a means for us to take care of that. Exactly.
These poor people that had divorced us before they knew better. Now the question is abstinence.
Yes, it is. It's prayer, study. I know of a gospel preacher who, at a very early age, got caught up into that his wife put him away and he could not remarry. And it was abstinence for the rest of his life. And he said it was tough. But his solution was to give himself over completely to the study of God's Word and preaching and being about the Lord's business. I'm not denying that it's difficult. I'm not denying that it's tough. But what I'm suggesting is if we can instill in people that fact and let them know and appreciate and understand what God has provided for allowing them to take care of that, they will stay married, they will conduct their lives with wisdom. Because the problem is, in those instances particularly, is even when they were married, they did not have the self-control to say no to someone outside of the marriage union. So it's a problem probably that goes back even beyond that. But I appreciate what you're saying. It is tough.
Those people, if you marry and not divorced and you go outside of your marriage, but you can still reconcile because you're still married.
Right.
The guy that can't reconcile is the guy that got divorced.
Right.
I understand it's not quite even. The guy that played around and still married, it definitely has an advantage.
But I'm talking about the one that got divorced because they were playing around. I mean, yeah, but they couldn't say no beforehand. So there's something more to it than just having the yearning, and it's tough. God expects us to practice self-control, and we can. That brings me to something else, too, and I've talked about this over where we're at, and this is part of the problem. It's society. In agrarian societies, basically, what's the common age for a young guy and a young woman to get married in an agrarian society in many parts of the world, or when you go back in history? 15? Yeah, 15, 16, 17 years old, you were married. That was very common in the agrarian society. I mean, when are we as humans ready physically? And when are the hormones raging the most for us to get together and start having a family? Mid to late teens. And that was common. Now, in Western civilization, we raise up our children and we tell them, wait, finish school, go to college, get that education, make sure you're able to support your family. Young women, make sure you get an education. Wait, wait, wait. Yes, your hormones are raging, but channel it into sports, channel it into school. You need to go to school. We're not living in an agrarian society. To get by in this world and to raise a family and to provide for them right, go to school first. Which means now you're not getting married till you're 22, 23, 24 years old. So we're telling them, wait, wait, wait. Now that's good advice, except at the same exact time, in the movies, television, magazines, and everywhere else, we are bombarding young men, visually and otherwise, with the message, you don't have to wait. Don't wait. If it feels good, do it. Boy, this is where it's at. We've got all these things in place that so you can have what they call safe sex. As we've said, a young man in this country doesn't have a chance. You look at some of these channels on TV where the music is and stuff. What do you see? Things that are designed to arouse, especially in men, certain feelings. We got what? About 10 minutes?
No.
About 5 minutes?
You are over.
Oh, I'm over. You owed me 5 minutes. Well, what I'm saying, you get the point I'm making? That's why you were doing. I thought you were telling me 10 minutes with the X. I'm sorry. I went to go and cover some other things because I don't want to just be negative. I wanted to give out some ways that we can combat this, but we're out of time. But you see the point I'm making about we're telling young folks today to wait, and yet we're bombarding them and making it impossible to wait, doing everything we can to flatly contradict the message we're telling them and make it worse.